Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslavsky. Come along for this sensory experience if you feel like that's what you gotta do. It might make you happy, and a whole lot more. This is episode number 70. Yo, yo. It's super cool to have you listening to this episode. And man, I am grateful for every download, every person clicking play, and especially for you. So thanks for tuning in once or a bunch. Now, before we get this puppy cranked up, I'd like to give a warm welcome to the influx of new listeners that I've received lately. Some of you heard about this show from a friend who heard it from a friend who heard it from another that you would, well, dig the show. Some of you are even folks I spoke with at South by Southwest in Austin, Texas last week, or hey, maybe you were among the 250 people who heard me speak about this whole experience curating dealio at my South by Southwest talk. Whoever you are, it's now my goal to continuously earn the privilege of having you listen in and give you a reason to become a Smart and Simple Matters regular. Speaking of South by Southwest, you know, I had a darn good time at the festival for 5 days. I connected with community managers who taught me about how to build and manage online and offline communities, something that's especially important for my Simple Rev role. Chatted with prominent folks in the share economy ecosystem, mindfulness enthusiasts who are trying to figure out their daily rituals, just like I am, Burning Man participants that make me really, really want to go now and experience that, and some of the coolest librarians in America and other countries for that matter. I would really, though, like to give a special shout out to some specific and fantastic folks I met while in Austin. Ellen Watkins, Francesca Pick, Jody Garrison, Kate Voss-Winkle, Mira Stroika, Rebecca Throne, Sam Horn, Sean Rogers, and Stuart Fortier. You guys, and my super generous friend, Julie Van de Zand, who let me stay at her house for 5 days, made a huge impact in my overall experience, and I am grateful. If you're listening, I hope you're smiling right now. If we connected somehow at South by Southwest and I didn't mention your name, hey, it's because of my leaky brain, not because you don't rock as well. By the way, this is neato. I even squeezed in some entertainment while I was there, like going to a live Upright Citizens Brigade show with most of the original group, no less, and laughed my booty off. I used to watch the Upright Citizens Brigade. It was a TV show back in the late 90s and early 2000s, back in my college days, and this group still gots it. Okay, as someone once said, you know, and obviously I didn't curate the quote, let's get on with the show. Here's what David, Christina, my guests, and I are giving you in this episode. First, we explore how to make life happen for you instead of happen to you. Then we look at the mysterious link between productivity and a slow, minimalist lifestyle. Follow that up with the meaning of streamlining and how it supports a simple life, why there's more to life than meeting your obligations, how to, figuratively, make room for flowers to bloom and remove your weeds, and why simplicity still needs a whole lot of simplifying. Add all that up, you have one doozy of an episode. And David and I might have nerded out about spreadsheets towards the end. That was awesome. Listen to the whole episode, and I'll give you the details about getting David and Christina's new ebook, Why You're Not Living the Life You Want, for free through April 22nd, 2015. I'm ready. You ready? Here we go. Hey, Smart and Simple Matters listeners. I'm pumped up, feeling awfully funky fresh right now, because my guests today are David and Christina, more popularly known as Tico and Tina. They are digital tent makers who are passionate about helping people live a more healthy, meaningful life. They are also constantly conducting personal experiments in streamlining and share practical tips and resources for creating space and freedom in life for what matters at their site, makeroomforgreatness.com. Welcome to the show, David and Christina.
Hey, Joel. Thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, we're going to have some fun and offer a ton of insight, because I've been studying what you two have been putting out there online for the past few months, and there is some great, great things for us to talk about. And you're fun people, too. We'll have a good time here.
Well, I think so, yeah. We'll have fun.
I'm glad we all agree on that. Hopefully the people who are listening agree, too. I'm sure they will. Well, let's get started with the seeds of awesomeness. I would like each of you to tell us one or two experiences that you had growing up, or maybe even a specific something in your environment as a kid that helps explain who you are today. Who wants to take that one first?
He's pointing at me, so I guess I'll go.
Ladies first.
I had a bit of an unconventional upbringing, I guess you could say. I grew up with a very entrepreneurial family. My dad was in business for himself, basically, as long as I can remember. And so I was trained to answer the phone professionally by the age of about seven. And so there was just a lot of entrepreneurial stuff going on in my life. I was also homeschooled my whole schooling career and lived in China for a while as a teenager, which really sparked my love of travel. So just in general, I guess my life was a little bit odder than most of the people that I was familiar with, than most of my friends growing up. And so I always kind of felt just a little bit odd.
I would say I don't know anyone else who was trained to answer the phones from a professional perspective by the age of seven. And I do know someone else who spent some time in China in their youth. But that combination of being homeschooled and all those other things, that's a pretty cool combo. David, how about you?
Well, I'm kind of odd myself. I grew up in Costa Rica. I lived there for those who don't know where Costa Rica is, it's in Central America. It's not Puerto Rico. That's it gets commonly mistaken.
No kidding.
Anyways, so yeah, I grew up in Costa Rica. I lived there for 20 years. My mom is actually a Costa Rican. So my dad is an American and my mom is a Costa Rican. So I'm kind of like a half and half. And that kind of threw me for a loop a little bit, because I wasn't exactly, you know, full Costa Rican and I wasn't full American. So I always had that little bit of a, you know, dichotomy, a little bit of a split personality. I don't know. That sounds worse. Sounds worse than it is, but it also gave me like a really a broad perspective on life, a broad perspective on different cultures. And, you know, you kind of learn to embrace differences in cultures, embrace differences in people and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I think that's one of the things that really just kind of colored who I was or who I am. Well, I'm still here. So.
So on that topic, a lot of people, when they see a different culture, they instantly figure out, how is this person different than me? But it sounds like maybe it was your parents, or maybe it was just something about your nature, in terms of, you know, embracing that the difference and the tension between the cultures, between these two different worlds that you were living in. Why do you think it was that you were looking for something positive, as opposed to, oh man, I can't decide, like, should I be Costa Rican? Should I be American? Should I draw from this? Should I draw for that? How do you think that you got to be that way, where you were looking at the positive side of things, as opposed to, well, how do I reconcile all this weird stuff?
Well, it's, you kind of have to look at the positive, really, because I mean, you can, I can see the ugly, if you will, from both cultures. I mean, there's things that Costa Ricans do that I'm just like, oh my word, that's so horrible. And things that Americans do that, you know, the same. And if you focus only on the bad things, then you're going to end up hating one or the other, which in turn ends up meaning that you're hating one part of yourself or another part of yourself. So, you know, you kind of just have to say, yeah, these are the good things that these places have, and you need to enjoy those good things and love them for what they are. Mm-hmm. And also just kind of, you know, not ignore the bad parts of it, but, you know, just kind of hold them lightly, if you will, you know, take them with a grain of salt or something like that. Mm-hmm. And know that it's something that you want your country, your culture to fix, to get better at, and move from there, really.
I like that. And you could apply that in so many different ways. I grew up in a Jewish household, but on my whole mom's side of the family was Lutheran. And so I had both these influences, and one wasn't good and the other one wasn't bad. They were both just cool influences on my life. With politics, too. Whether you're Democrat or Republican, conservative, liberal, or in other countries, they can figure out what they are. I don't know the politics of every country. But that's a pretty good approach to take, is instead of trying to hate one side of you or one side of your family or your experience, you can just figure out where the cool overlap is or what's good from both and draw from there. Mm-hmm. Good thing to think about. Well, I'm curious about a lot of things, but I want to make sure that people get an opportunity to hear a little bit about your backstory as a couple, because when I read your website, you paint this picture of a couple which is just busy, like super, super busy. You're stressed out like crazy, and you don't really have time for the things that you are passionate about. As you reflect on those times, how did it get to be that way?
I feel like we kind of had a vague notion of what we were shooting for in our quote unquote someday life, but we didn't have the kind of focus that we needed to get there. And so on the one hand, I feel like we were subconsciously thinking towards that someday life, but living kind of by default and just having the struggle inside of us of being frustrated where we were, but not really knowing how to change or move forward with where we wanted to be.
What do you mean by living by default?
Just kind of like, you know, life comes at you and you just kind of roll with the punches, kind of letting life happen to you as opposed to happening to life, like with a purpose.
At the beginning, like once we got married, we went through this Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace Universities stuff. And so the first year and a half, I would say, we were laser intensive. We were trying mm-hmm. to focus on getting out of debt and trying to get some what he called his emergency fund in the bank. So once we got that, then it was like, whoo, we got here, awesome. And then we just you sat down at the top of the mountain, sat down on the rock or halfway up the mountain, you kind of just chilled out for a while. And then we had a child, and then stuff just kind of started happening, and life just started happening, and we didn't take that time of rest to kind of figure out, okay, what's the next step? We just kind of hung out for a little bit, and life caught us, basically.
Life caught you. It chased you down. It got you.
Yeah. That's what it felt like.
Well, if you stand still, life will come and get you, as opposed mm-hmm. to going into it. Okay, so it sounds like the first big step was Dave Ramsey's Financial Peace University. So you have that frame of reference. You start eliminating some of your debts. What about the next couple of big shifts that you made away from just running around like frantic people towards what you now have? It sounds like at least that slower, more minimalist lifestyle.
I think something that we were working toward for a while was being able to buy our own home, because we wanted to kind of minimize the risk of David being able to come home also for us to both work from home full time. So once we did make that step in buying our first home, he was able to go to part-time at his day job, and things started to feel like we had a little bit more space. We were able to start trying to get caught up on client projects and stuff like that. But it was still, I don't know, it was still frantic. I honestly, like, I don't know how crazy we felt at the time. I mean, we could tell we weren't getting stuff done, but I don't think we realized how stressed out we were necessarily all the time. It's more almost looking back and comparing our lives now to our life then that we realize how we were just trying to do too many things at once, mm-hmm. and not having the focus that we needed to really move forward. But yeah, I would say the second shift was probably when we bought our first home.
What were some of those too many things that you're trying to do? I know you said, so David, you're going part-time, you have your first child, you now have two kids. Mm-hmm. What are you trying to juggle in this period in your life where things are just totally up in the air and you're looking at each ball coming down like, oh, Lordy, how am I going to handle this one?
It's more like there are five balls coming at us at the same time. But we go to church. We were participating in church, and we had I was leading the worship time at church, and so I was a worship leader, so that involved like about twice a month having a week that I had to take care of practices and take care of calling people and making sure that people were coming, and then picking the songs, and then being at church on Sunday mornings at 8 o'clock. Then we had work stuff, and I was still doing stuff at my old job. And so, when I left that job, I was, management. I still had people calling me, hey, how did you do this? Or how do you do that? And stuff like that. And,
meanwhile, we're trying to build our business and figure out how life works with both of us at home and parenting and, just so many little things, just like time hanging out with friends and I don't know, just the normal stuff that you juggle day to day and adding on top of it, like the whole building a business thing, which I feel like is definitely a full-time endeavor. But we had been kind of behind for so long in some of our client projects and stuff, and David learning to work from home was kind of a big jump. And so it just felt like every aspect of our life was kind of chaotic. It didn't feel like, it felt like more like we were just trying to survive as opposed to really conquering and flourishing and growing in what we were trying to do.
I think like, I want to second what Christina said about not really realizing at the time, not really feeling the pressure at the time. We were kind of like just surviving. And if we look back at our life, then we're like, man, you know, we had all these obligations, and we were just kind of like meeting them, but not really moving forward,
yeah.
Not really progressing. And so that pressure builds up in the sense that you're like feeling, okay, I know I have a purpose, and I know that this is our goal, but it's just not happening. And so it's not like you're thinking about that all the time, but when you do think about it, you're like, oh my word, we have so much stuff to do, mm-hmm. and it's just not happening.
All right, well, so we've got a good idea of where you were. Now, where you are right now is pretty cool. So yes, you're both working together from home. You're debt-free. You have the freedom to travel wherever the heck you want to, and you do. You two are constantly on the move, which is pretty cool. It sounds like I have this thing I talk about, my personal renaissance, and it sounds like you had a familial renaissance. And I keep – those are my words, of course, not yours. But one of your words that I keep seeing pop up again and again and again is this word streamline. Can you tell us that word streamline? I don't really see anyone else use it. Why does that word resonate with you so much, and what's the deal with it?
Well, the simple definition of streamline is basically just to alter in order to make more efficient or simple. And so I guess when you think of something that's streamlined, it flows smoothly. There isn't a lot of resistance. And I know there's always going to be a certain amount of resistance in life, which is a good thing because, you know, struggle makes us stronger. Friction can help to polish off rough edges and stuff like that. But I'm a firm believer that there are a lot of things in day-to-day life, just generally speaking, that can cause resistance where it isn't helpful, where it just wears us down and tires us out. So we really like to try to streamline all the different various little day-to-day aspects of life that basically just take time away from what we would rather be doing. For example, with food, cooking and that kind of thing, that's something that we're trying to work on this year and getting to where we can create healthy meals simply and on a good budget. Stuff with our wardrobe, as far as like we want to look nice and put together and stuff, and I care about fashion, but at the same time I don't want to be chasing it down. I don't want it to be something that I think about a lot or have to stand in front of my closet and try to figure out what to wear. Like, I want it to just be a small, simple wardrobe that I can basically just put anything together essentially and it'll look good. So different aspects of life like that that take away time from things that we would rather be doing, just streamlining everything that we can think of to streamline, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, so you talked about two things, food and clothing. Mm-hmm. We all need to wear clothing and exactly. We all need to eat food. Yeah. So let's start with food, because that one is something that everybody can resonate with very strongly. Over the last 6 months, year, however long since you started this streamlining process, at least from a food perspective, how are you actually doing it?
Oh my.
Well, honestly, this isn't something that we have worked a lot on yet. So far, the main thing that we've done is we've said, okay, lunches, for example, they're going to be sandwiches or leftovers, essentially. Suppers, we'll make stuff, you know, make more of a full-blown meal or whatever, but it's going to be basically, okay, going off of rice, pasta, potatoes, something like a salad, something like that, and then building around those things. And we don't eat hardly any meat largely because of budget, because it's cheaper not to eat meat. And also because I don't feel like it's necessarily that healthy in general. But so far, we haven't really moved forward that much in the food aspect other than just keeping meals really simple. What we want to do moving forward this year is get really well-rounded menus, and that's something we're going to be working on probably this summer.
Okay. I bet there'll be some good YouTube videos coming out about that.
Hopefully, yeah.
Let's hope so.
Okay. Well, David, what about you on the clothing side of things? How does one streamline their clothing?
It's funny that you're talking to me about this, because I generally I'm very streamlined in my clothing.
Yeah, he is.
I have a pair of jeans and a t-shirt. And if I'm at home, a pair of shorts. And that's basically it. I mean, I don't really put a lot of thought into my clothing. I take a shower. I try to be as quick as I can with my shower. And I know what I'm going to wear, which is jeans and t-shirt. And that's about it for me.
All right.
So, I mean,
I'm going to take that one back over to Christina then.
Yeah, I think so. I think I should, because she has a lot more to say about it than I do.
As far as, yeah, David definitely has his uniform going on, which works really well for him. I do really like fashion, but I've never felt that confident in it or like I knew that much what I was doing. So that's something that I'm working on also this year, is kind of trying to really narrow down my style a little bit. And I think that there's a lot you can do once you kind of decide what direction you want to take your style. And one of the big things with wardrobe is just figuring out your basics. And I'm a big fan of capsule wardrobes, essentially, but which is basically choosing a number of items that you just wear those for, like, usually I think it's around 3 months or something like that.
And then so, like, pick Project 333 style.
Something like that, yeah. Okay. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. But I want to kind of evolve that a little bit into, like, I want my whole wardrobe to be kind of fitting into that and more take pieces in and out of my wardrobe over time. I kind of like the idea of like leveling up your wardrobe or upgrading the wardrobe, because I really love thrift shopping. And so I want to be able to, and sales or whatever, like I want to be able to take advantage of sales and of just going thrift shopping every now and then. But just switching out items in my wardrobe rather than I'm trying to get more in my wardrobe, which is the way that I used to think about it. Like, oh, I just don't have enough clothes. That's why I don't feel like I have anything to wear. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that I just wasn't focused enough in my style and in the way I put things together. So I actually feel a lot better now that I have a lot less clothes.
Gotcha. Well, let's stick on this streamlining path just one more time. I read a recent blog post of yours. It's called "The Very Easiest Decluttering Step, Digitizing." It was really good. I'm like to think of myself as a pretty good digitizer and and just very comfortable in the digital realm without having it overwhelm me. But I know a lot of people, they don't know where to start. I'm going to link to the blog post in the show notes so people can read it themselves. But maybe one of you could tell me, how have you been streamlining your digital world lately?
Well, we have a lot of older stuff, older pictures that we had sitting around in boxes and stuff like that. We had a file cabinet that was full of old files. So this past year, we kind of went through that stuff, and we actually brought a lot of it with us down here to the South for this winter. David is kind of spearheading that a little
bit. Yeah, the thing with that, the reason why we brought it is because we don't want to take it back.
Yeah.
So basically, it's just we use for our documents and stuff like that, we've been using the Neat scanner. And that's pretty nifty because it has its own program that you can you make the scan and you can add information to the different fields so that it's easily searchable. Mm-hmm. And you can add the dates and stuff like that. It has a I think it's called an OCR, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Optical character recognition.
Whoa. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's the thing where you scan maybe even a picture that has words in it, but the software says, oh, I see these things in the picture. They're words. Let me take that, and I'm going to spit those out and put them into a separate document for you, or embed those words in the document itself so you can search on those words because you can't actually search the picture itself or something.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So it's super nifty because – of that, you know, most of the time it'll put the right date in it and stuff like that. And so I have my little system. I have it organized by years, and whatever is in the business category goes into the business category. Whatever's in the personal category goes into that. And so we're making headway with that. And then I think we're just going to, with our old pictures, I think it's just going to go into as close to the year as it is, our guess, and we're going to basically put that into folders and get rid of all our pictures and get rid of all our papers, and we're going to have a lighter car on the way back.
We sound so unsentimental getting rid of all our pictures, but realistically, you don't look at them. They just sit in a box in the closet.
And honestly, the pictures are, I mean, they're sitting in the bins or whatever they are, and they're, you know, squishing into each other, and they're actually getting damaged. So, I mean, they don't get damaged if they're in a digital file, unless you dunk your hard drive in water or something like that. And so I feel like it's actually preserving the pictures that we have, preserving those memories.
Yeah. Well, I like your approach to it. I'm going to make a recommendation. So if I know a ton of people struggle with this, both physical and digital photos, there's a great episode of one of my favorite podcasts, Simple Life Together. It's episode 40. It's called How to Organize Your Photos. And Kathy Nelson, she's the featured guest on Dan and Vanessa's episode. She's the founder and president of the Association of Personal Photo Organizers. It's an amazing listen. And I would encourage other people to listen to that episode if they want to wrap their head or hands around something that's just seemingly huge, maybe even literally.
Yeah.
Like Christine, I noticed you're chuckling a little bit like, yeah, we're not going to have photos or paper. I don't know if you're chuckling because it was the unsentimental part, or you're like, yeah, we're probably not going to get it done by the time we need to get it done. I'm not sure which one it is, but
she's definitely the realist in this team over here.
Well, you get rid of the paper and you get rid of the photos so that you can make room for greatness. Am I right?
Yes.
You got it.
Okay. So this is one of your themes. I mean, the name of the website that I mentioned at the top of the show, it's about making room for greatness. Just at the super duper high level, can each of you give us one or two ways that you have made room for greatness?
Can you clarify what you mean by the high level?
So let's put it a different way. You talk about defying your comfort zones.
Mm-hmm.
And now that it seems like if you're not on the move, if you don't have some uncertainty in your life, then you start getting uncomfortable. And I'm the same way, where before it was all about comfort and stability and not rocking the boat. That was what I wanted. Now I lead a life of some pretty calculated risk and uncertainty. And when things start to stagnate a little bit, I get uncomfortable with the stagnation and with the stability. So maybe you can give us an example of things you've done in the past few years that have just shattered your comfort boundaries. Because that's one of the things that I've interpreted in terms of how you make room for greatness is welcoming in discomfort and being okay with that.
Yeah, I would say over the past couple of years, probably one of the things that sticks out is going on a 9-week road trip around the U.S. It basically just kind of turned into this thing where we went around and interviewed about 30 different people, did video interviews of just kind of like asking them how they do what they do essentially, or how they got to be doing what they were doing. And it was a large mix, a large variety of people. A lot of people who were kind of starting to follow their dreams or who were already, you know, somewhat successful, or maybe why they were scared to start, or, you know, just basically kind of trying to get inside of people's heads what makes people do what they do. And that was very much out of our comfort zone, for one thing, because we didn't have a really set schedule. We didn't know how long we were going to be gone. We didn't know necessarily, we didn't have everything lined up as far as who we were going to be interviewing when. We were kind of flying by the seat of our pants, which I feel like we do a little bit too much sometimes. but it was a very, very interesting summer, and we learned a lot, I think. And just the whole act of just getting out there and then just trying something was, I feel, really helpful for growth and getting to where we are now.
All right. David, over to you. What about you and making room for greatness? Is it related to travel? Because I know you two, you've lived all over the Midwest, California. David, you were in Costa Rica for a long time. You were in Israel for a year and a half, probably some more places that I don't know about. Is there more to this greatness than the freedom to travel? Or is that really a primary focus that you have too?
I think with the whole making room for greatness, I think a big thing and I don't want people to be all annoyed by the connotation or whatever, but like as the male or the male figure in the family, I feel like not having a quote unquote steady income is a big deal there. It kind of, for me, it's really out of my comfort zone because, you know, I feel like I handle the financials for our family. And so I'm kind of thinking I have a view of what's going on and stuff like that. And so, it's like, wow, okay, we're not getting that much in this month, or not going to get that much in next month, or we have to do this or whatever. And so that's really out of my comfort zone. I mean, who doesn't really like a modicum of security, but that at the same time, keeps us on our toes. It keeps us thinking, okay, what can we do now? How can we attack this problem, or how can we solve this, or what do we need to do to get to where we want to get to, and stuff like that. And
I feel like those are ways that we stay out of our comfort zone, but I don't think it's necessarily related specifically to making room for greatness. I mean, it's related to it in the sense that it makes room in that aspect of our life. But in general, David and I were talking earlier, and he brought up the idea of like a flower that is surrounded by weeds. Do you want to say anything about that?
Well, I mean, it's basically where you have this cool flower. It's surrounded by a bunch of weeds. And so you want to keep the flower, but you don't want to keep the weeds. So you just make room. You take the weeds out. You take all these extra things out from around that flower, and you make it so that the flower can get all of the resources that it needs to grow, because you want that to grow. And so that's basically, to us, what making room for greatness is. You want to clear all the weeds so that all the resources that you have don't go to growing weeds. They go to growing that flower, that plant that you want to have that will be something great.
Which, yeah. I mean, obviously you have to kind of identify, okay, what's the flower? Like, what is the goal? What are our important things, essentially? And then the other stuff, you can start to kind of see, you can kind of identify what the weeds are that are kind of choking out the good stuff.
Yeah, altering your landscape to make it more efficient or simple. Streamlining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. Yep.
All right. Well, by the way, going back to the parallel, I know that there's probably not a direct correlation between being okay with discomfort and greatness, but just me personally, in the last 5 years since my personal renaissance began, I don't really feel like I had any greatness associated with me over the first 30 years of my life, nor do I think I'm some kind of big deal now. I'm certainly not a big shot, but in terms of my impact and my ability to have greatness, to do good, it's so much larger now that I have a lot of intentional uncertainty in my life than it was before, which is all about stability and comfort, as I was saying. So I think you do need to have a level of uncertainty, a level of constant reevaluation, so that, as you were talking about earlier, you're not living a default life. You're constantly thinking, what is it that I want? Like, what does my flower look like? How tall should it get? What colors is it? How far should it stretch out? Like, how much water do I give it? These are the questions that we really need to be asking ourselves over and over again to have that semblance of greatness that you were talking about. There's a couple more things I want to talk to you about, and this is rather random. Of course, I'm kind of a random dude, so probably shouldn't surprise most people. I found it really intriguing. There's a category on your website for uncommon productivity, and you describe it in the same sentence as minimalism and simple living. So here I am. I'm thinking, how is productivity, which, at least in my mind, it's about efficiency, getting more done, how is that in alignment with the slowness of minimalism and simple living that you two have as a family?
Well, I guess I would maybe ask you a question in the same line. Why do you want to live simply and live minimalism? Like,
yeah,
I mean, there's
good question. I'm glad you turned it around on me.
Yeah. So like for us, I feel like, we don't just want to live simply and with a minimalist mindset for ourselves, like for our family. We want to affect others and inspire others and help others. Like our goal is to be constantly helping other people. And so we want to be productive in that. We don't necessarily want to just, honestly, I don't quite understand the whole slowness thing with simple living. We like speed and we like technology and we like, big cities and stuff like that. So I feel like maybe we're a little bit of a hybrid of both worlds. Maybe, I don't know.
I like it too. The slowness to me is about the pace of the day. Mm-hmm.
Hurried. Yeah.
Right. Like I wasn't trying to check off 50 different things on my list before we recorded this interview. I approached the day with a weekly plan that I do on Sunday evening, and then I'm just executing it, not trying to pack in so much that I'm like, oh man, did I hit the record button? Like, are we live? It's just having that kind of calm, slowness, self-paced, where I'm the one who's determining, maybe I go for a walk with the dogs. I want to be able to go for a walk with the dogs for 45 minutes or for an hour and not have to worry about, oh, geez, I got to get back because this thing is starting and I got to send these 10 emails. That's not the kind of lifestyle that I have. So, I live in a big city. I live in Minneapolis, St. Paul metro area. I'm a big city dude, and I like that. I like the fact that there's fast trains around here and fast cars. That's all good too. So the slowness is more about the mental state and your approach to the day. And, and I want to be productive too. Like, it's really important for me to be productive. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that you were describing it, I was just wondering, there is overlap between productivity and minimalism, for example. I wanted to know what you thought it might be.
I guess when you said the slowness part, my mind immediately goes to someone living in a tiny house in the middle of nowhere, like off the grid, and yay, we're here. We're here in nature or whatever, which we like nature and we like all that stuff. But I guess just minimalism and simple living to us, like you were saying, essentially, we just word it differently, I guess, with the slowness aspect, is just getting rid of the hurry and the busyness so that we can focus and be productive on what we feel is important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I agree. I think she said everything that I would have said, but mainly using, to me, it's like using minimalism as a tool, as a way to make make room so that you can schedule things the way that you want to schedule them during the week, so that you can, you have that freedom to do, that freedom to live slowly, if you will, or whatever you want to call it, you know.
And I think as far as like uncommonly productive, quote unquote, the more that you focus down, the more productive you can really be. Because when you're going a million different directions, you're not really that productive in any one thing.
That's true. Yeah, if you're constantly switching back and forth and your brain's never present with the tasks that you're doing, you're not going to be knocking it out of the park very frequently.
Right.
Good point. Well, one thing that I probably should have asked you before, Christina, you were mentioning your focus on helping people right now. Can you just tell us in a couple of minutes, like, how are you actively helping people, whether it's through your website? I know you two have a ton of skills and a lot of different facets to your business. What are the main ways that you're helping people right now?
I feel like right now we are especially trying to have conversations that help people to think differently about the way that they approach life, just in our day-to-day interactions, for one thing, and then also through our website, through the content that we're looking to put out. Right now, this year, what we're trying to do is start building a course or courses that can help people approach simple living and minimalism, that can, I guess, maybe simplify the way of getting into it. And we're not sure exactly where that's going to go yet. That's something we're in the research stages of, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. So you're looking to lower the barrier of entry into a simple, streamlined lifestyle.
Essentially.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay. I love how you say things, Joel. It's just every time I'm like, oh, I wish I could be that quick on my feet. I have to sit there and think about it and write stuff, and then I can kind of think. But
it's ironic that the default that humans used to have for 99.9999999% of our existence was what we're trying to get back to. And that the simple, the easy, the sustainable choice, that's the hard one to make. That's the hard one to execute on. And so anything that we can do either at the individual level or say at the cultural or institutional level to lower that barrier, to return back to what we used to have that we don't have anymore, to make that simple, sustainable choice the default one, that's awesome. So I'm personally really excited about what you have coming up.
Awesome. Yeah, we're looking forward to seeing what exactly that turns into, because we don't know yet.
Okay. Well, before we wrap up this episode, I also want to note, I was talking about skills, and you list some of them in your profiles across the internet. They're hilarious. People should just go hunting for you two across the internet, just because there's a ton of laughs waiting to happen.
Oh, dear. You're making me nervous. I don't know what's out there.
No, I'm serious. So, I mean, there's typical stuff, like you two branding and identity, you're good. Print design, I'm sure you're awesome. Systems efficiency, the systems nerd in me is like, yeah, right on, you two. You list Excel, Microsoft Excel, and the spreadsheet fanatic in me is nodding my head like, what kind of Excel skills do these two have? But one thing that I noticed is car dance parties. You list that as one of your skills. What's the deal with the car dance parties? How does one become a pro at car dance parties?
Well, I guess we're not professionals in the sense that we get paid for it, sadly.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
But I feel like, I don't know, just like dancing around kind of keeps you young. No, you had something you wanted to say about
that. I can't remember. Well, I mean, we do drive a lot.
Well, that's true.
We do a lot of driving, and so, I mean,
It helps you to approach life from kind of a humble standpoint of, wow, I'm not that great at this, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. And we're both really musical. Our kids are also. And so we have our special songs that when they come on the radio or when we put them on, we just kind of have to dance. We just kind of have to move to the music, especially if you're in a car and there's not much to do anyways.
Yeah.
So,
well, your daughter, Mavie, and then your son, Maverick, is there a tune that they each have right now that just need a bus to move to in their seats?
Oh, man. I don't know if there's one really specifically right now. They always like Ferrell's Happy. They like to dance to that.
That is a very happy song.
Yeah.
Then Gautier, back in the day, that Gautier song, somebody that I used to know.
Yeah, that used to be a big one.
Really enjoyed that. And I mean, maybe it has her years defined by songs, I think. Because then it was L City's Fireflies when she was like right before Maverick was born. That was the song that it was always, you know, she'd always be singing it or.
You would not believe your eyes. 10,000 fireflies. Okay,
exactly.
They're the Owl City. They're local to the Twin Cities. That's
oh, are they?
Yeah,
I know a little bit more about them than I would other bands. I'm not super into the music scene, but I get the whole remembering your years based on the songs that were on the radio. I remember pretty well from those days.
Yeah.
Okay. Now about those Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, dear.
What are you doing with them, and what goes in them?
Oh, David's just a nerd. He likes to try to put whatever he can.
Well, see, I never was officially trained to do Excel or anything of the sort. But back in the day when I was working at this place, I had to basically learn Excel because that's all that they did. Like the people that were in charge, that's what they used. And so I kind of learned, and I do a little bit of coding and stuff like that. And it kind of, I don't know. I think I just enjoy seeing, hey, if you put this and then you send this information to this cell over here and then you multiply it by X or whatever, then you're going to get the answer that you need and stuff like that. And so I just really enjoy tinkering with Excel and making, you know, trying to make it work for me, trying to make it simplify my life or whatever. And so, I mean, I use a little bit with doing the finances and stuff like that. But I don't get to use it as much as I would like. And they still use my Excel spreadsheets at my old job. So, I mean, I'm pretty proud about that.
I hope – I don't know that I could say the same. So I'm about 3 years out from my corporate gig, and I created some pretty – like that's why – one of the reasons why I love Excel. So simple. The sorting and filtering and organizing, it's just – a system of rows and columns in a grid format. That's it. And so many people are intimidated by it. Like, ooh, no, I could never use it. Like, I don't know formulas. You don't need to know formulas to have an awesome Excel spreadsheet. Well, that's really cool that people are still using it at your work. We'll talk more Excel some other time. I can already almost hear or see the eyeballs rolling like, oh, God, Joe's talking about spreadsheets again. Can this guy just please move on to something else? I'm sick about hearing him ask people about their Excel spreadsheets.
It was funny. Like last year we went to visit an old friend, and he started talking about his spreadsheets. And
pretty soon it was a show and tell.
It was like, hey, look at my spreadsheet. I have this and this and this in it. And he would be like, oh, really? How did you get that? And, I mean, I taught myself how to do graphs and how to read graphs and stuff like that and how to use them with an Excel spreadsheet, and I felt really proud of myself about that.
There he was going, trying to switch from that.
I was just sitting there. I would just sit there and pore over the information. Sorry. Yeah, I know you were doing your transition, Joel. Sorry. I'll shut up now.
I wasn't. No, hey, we're still talking about spreadsheets.
I'm the one over here rolling my eyes. So.
Okay, good. I'm glad somebody's doing it. All right. Well, we've covered a lot of ground here, but I want to just leave it completely open to you. You can talk about whatever you want here. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you would like people to know?
I think if I would say one thing to my old self, it would be, or to my younger self, it would be just start simplifying. The sooner, the better. The more you simplify just in every aspect of life, the easier it is to figure out where you're going and just to make things work better, to be less stressed. What along those lines are?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I kind of, if I would want to say anything, it would be kind of like to add a little bit, just to kind of touch back to the whole streamlining thing. And it's some practical advice for one, but also it's you need to see streamlining as making yourself agile. Mm-hmm. You make yourself agile so that when you see where to go as far as your greatness or your life goal or whatever you want to do, so that you can move there quickly. And if you're being bogged down, like think of when you go grocery shopping and you have these bags hanging from your arms and stuff like that, if you need to move quickly or if you need to do something quickly or change direction, you're going to fall over because you have so much extra weight hanging from your arms and your back and whatever.
Obviously, we're the people that try to take all the groceries in one trip.
Yeah.
Yes, I can tell you're speaking from experience.
So streamlining, simplifying your life is about that, is about being able to change direction quickly, mm-hmm. and being able to, when the opportunity presents itself, to hit it with everything that you have and not be bogged down or slowed down by mm-hmm. anything. Mm-hmm. And so if anything to say would be that, you know, you don't need to have your greatness defined. You don't need to have your idea of what you want to do mm-hmm. defined already to start simplifying your life now. And making yourself agile so that when that idea does present itself, that you can hit it with everything that you have right away and not be trying to pick your bananas from the floor.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, is that there's so many times that we want to try to wait until everything is lined up just right and we know that we can succeed with what we're trying to do. And I like now to look at it as – start practicing. Like, no matter what you're trying to do in life, you're going to have to practice. And why do you want to wait to start practicing? Get the practice, get the failures, get the mistakes out of the way so that you can get closer to what you're trying to do in life.
Absolutely. Well, I'm super stoked for you both that you're no longer waiting for your someday life and that so many of the things that you imagine you would do someday that you are doing. David, as you were saying, just hitting it with all you got. Mm-hmm. That's what you guys are doing, at least from my perspective, this year in 2015. And like I said earlier, I'm really excited for what you've already done, but I'm super, super excited for what comes next. And if other people want to understand what comes next or what you've already cranked out, where can they find you online?
They can go to TicoandTina.com or MakeRoomForGreatness.com. Right now, it's just going to the same place, so whichever is easier to remember, I guess.
Okay, so that's T-I-C-O and T-I-N-A.com, TicoandTina.com. Mm-hmm. Anywhere else, social media, perhaps YouTube, where you create lots of really cool things?
We have some interesting things there, yeah. Basically, anywhere online, you can find us as Tico and Tina.
Good. Well, thanks a ton, you two, for this conversation. I really enjoyed it. And except for the spreadsheet part, I bet everybody else enjoyed it.
Well, we had fun, too.
Yeah, thank you so much, yeah, Joel.
Thanks for having us.
All right. That was a fascinating chat with David and Christina, better known as Tico and Tina Online. And, well, this one, my friends, this is especially groovy. I was speaking with them before we started recording the episode, and they told me that they wanted to offer a gift to Smart and Simple Matters listeners. I was listening. So here's the dealio about getting a free copy of their new ebook, Why You're Not Living the Life You Want, good only until April 22nd, 2015. Now, this book is a collection of things that David and Christina would have told their stressed out, desperate younger selves that would have helped them live the life they wanted so much sooner. I've read snippets of the book, and I think it's somewhere between super and duper. So for you to get it, first, go to somedaynowbook.com. When you get to somedaynowbook.com, scroll down a bit until you get to the Buy It Now button. Click that button. Enter the word SIMPLE in all capital letters in the code field. Now, that code field is case sensitive, so it must be SIMPLE in all uppercase. Press the Apply button and then click the Get It Now button. You just need to add some info to the checkout form and voila, you'll get an email with a link to download the groovy book. Either before or after you read their book, think a little bit about this concept of streamlining. They define it as to alter something to make it more efficient or simple. Just for example, you could streamline your car by getting a more efficient one, maybe even challenging the assumption that you need one. Or two, or three, or however many you have or want to have. I'll tell you what, on my side, I'll be streamlining my podcasting workflow a bit so I can get you the good stuff with a bit less effort and a bit more polish. Whatever you do, it would be phenomenal if you could show David and Christina some love for all that they've given us and will continue to give us. You can find links to their website, social media profiles, their ebook, and more in the show notes at valueofsimple.com/SASM070. As a reminder from previous episodes, Simple Rev 2015 tickets are available as of late March 2015, when this episode is published, and the gathering is going down in Minneapolis, Minnesota on October 2nd and 3rd at the McNamara Alumni Center. Joshua Becker is going to be in the house again, oh yeah, along with newcomers to Simple Rev like Mark and Angel Chernoff, Farnoosh Brock, Donnie McClurkin. That is just for starters, folks. You get a whole lot more context and score your own ticket to Simple Rev 2015 at simplerev.com/tickets. Alrighty. Thanks for listening. I hope you're going to have a more streamlined life after this episode, and we'll listen in to the next one. Again, you gotta realize just how grateful I am to have your attention and get a little chunk of your time. It's one reason among many why you rock. Okay, it's time for your partner in simplifying to sign off again. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zeslowski, creator of All Things Value of Simple.